Fantastic Podcast, where we believe that through books and banter, all is possible. I'm Steph, aka Ideally Inspired Reviews on Instagram, and I'm joined by...
I'm Ava of Kingdom of Mass on Instagram.
So today we're going to be talking about Queen of Shadows, the fourth book of the Throne of Glass series, and definitely one of the wildest, according to Ava's script.
It is.
It's a thick book. So
yes. Seriously crazy that this book has 89 chapters and like every single one of them is a roller coaster. Like, we do not get a reprieve the entire time.
No,
it
we
is
don't.
Just like hit almost after 700 hit after straight hit. Pages of insanity. Yeah,
you're like, God, can somebody catch their breath? Shit. Seriously. My God. Anyways, but yes, it was crazy. Ooh.
Seriously. So, speaking of crazy,
yeah,
which one of Aelin's craziest plots did we think was like the most satisfying to read about? She had so many brilliant schemes. I think this is like one of the first books where we really see just how brilliant and unremorseful she is in her just intelligence and sharpness. So which one of her plots was our favorite?
I think my favorite is like the pettiest one, of course, which is after Arabin died, the fact that she like switched out the wills. And like, of course, like leading up to it, like, you know, people kept noticing that she was like missing or she had just gone off to do whatever, Rowan and Adian especially. And you're like, oh, she's going to like hunt Valg. Mm-hmm. Princes or going to do whatever. Like, no, she was going into the fucking bank and like finding all of these things. Yeah. Yeah, finding all these things to work to her advantage. Yeah, I love it. I love her brain. I'm here for it. It was petty as fuck. Oh my God. Because I think that like that whole scene with like when the will got read was like,
oh, that was
one
so funny.
Of the best too. Yeah. So anyways, what about you?
That was so great. I have to say it's like the scene right before that petty scene where I just love that she plans for the fact that Arabin is going to try to put the ring on her. And she like makes plans around that fact. So she goes to Lysandra's jeweler. She gets a new ring. And it's my favorite scene because like when he puts that ring on her finger, the first time that I read it and we see her, you know, obey all of his gross, creepy commands without hesitating, I didn't know what to do. I literally did not know what to do. I was like, this is the worst, like nothing worse than this could possibly happen. Because we've seen how apocalyptic it is with Dorian being, you know, stuck with this Valg demon inside of him. And so knowing that Arabin was like, he didn't give a fuck, he was gonna go for that either way, I was like, is this the moment where, and she doesn't have her magic, like she's defenseless. And then, you know, she gets inside the carriage and pulls it off and she's like, so that's what he wanted. Like, what a creepy weirdo, like unconcerned, very just like, I don't even, you know what, it's fine. it's whatever. Adian and Rowan are like looking at each other like, what the fuck just happened? I thought that was excellent. I think it gave her the closure that she needed regarding Arabin because like he did, you know, have such a prominent role in her life for so long. But I think knowing that he would have willingly taken that step and enslaved her literally to him, made her entirely unremorseful for his death. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, loved it. I thought
Same.
It was brilliant.
I mean, I just feel like with every reveal, you're just like, Aelin, you...
Yeah.
Minx, you genius, you. I mean, because the thing is for those who are new to the series, is like you're still, even once Empire of Storms comes, like there are still things that haven't been revealed in Queen of Shadows that like
right. She
was setting into motion. So
right. Just
she's so smart.
No, she's amazing.
She's so great.
And I think this is, you know, it's funny because it's been a meme for quite a while floating around the fandom, but I actually think that there are in a lot of ways are like parallels between her and like Captain Jack Sparrow from the Pirates of the Caribbean series where she like toes the line between like being completely insane and being an absolute genius in such like entertaining ways. And like it feels weird to say entertaining because the stakes in this world are so high, but like whenever she just walks around, swaggers around, ready to fuck shit up, like, it just makes me so happy. It's so fun to watch her, you know, kind of shake off the reins.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about one of the other elements of this book that I know for a fact that we both love, because we talked about it a little bit in The Assassin's Blade. Let's talk about Lysandra and the friendship between her and Aelin, and then, of course, which Lysandra scene is our favorite. Were you expecting Lysandra to make a return in Queen of Shadows the first time you read it? Like, in Queen of Shadows specifically?
Yes. And the reason being because, obviously, Erebin came back. So, like, at this point, I mean, there had been no indication. Like, we knew that Wesley had died, but, like, there had been no other indication about any of the original, the OG crew, not being alive. So I knew that Lysandra had to make an appearance at some point. Fun fact about Queen of Shadows, though. I read this book, so this book was embargoed. There were no ARCs, but because I was running moderating Sarah's launch event, like, Bloomsbury had sent me an early copy, and I wasn't allowed to talk about this book with anybody while I was reading it. And that was one of
See, it's really good that we did not know each other back then, because I would have been so annoying. You would have been like,
well, no, but I couldn't even, no, dude, I couldn't even post that I had it. No, the thing is, I couldn't even post that I had it. So nobody knew that I had it at all. So, like, I wasn't allowed to discuss it. I wasn't allowed
to be annoying.
But one of the things, like, thinking about Lysandra, like, one of the things that I remember that I really wanted to talk to somebody about was about, obviously, Lysandra and her charge. But, like, how, like, even in that moment, before you realize that, like, Lysandra clearly has always had the best of intentions, or was only, like, a result of Erebin trying to make both of them rivals towards one another, right. Like, whatever. But, like, in that moment, the fact that she had basically scarred, oh my gosh, what's her name?
Evangeline,
because I was going to call her Caroline, and that is not her name.
That's my sister's name.
Oh. Well, also, every time I say Caroline, I think of Andre 3000. Caroline. The Roses song. Oh, bless your heart. Okay, we're going to have to play this later. Anyways, but Jesus Christ.
Triggered. But anyways,
Evangeline, like, that she had scarred Evangeline's face basically to, like, make her, like, not marketable, I guess, if you will. And I found that to be, like, such a turning point for her character, like, at least for me as the reader, where I was like, oh my god, like, have we been shitting all over Lysandra, like, this whole time, you know? Like, and clearly she does have a heart. And then, of course, finding out that she had clearly had enough to buy her freedom years ago, but then she stayed because of Evangeline. So I loved all of the snippets, the inside look at Lysandra's character that we didn't get before, kind of just seeing her character with new eyes. That's what I really loved about Lysandra. I mean, aside from, like, of course, everything that happens in the end, pre-tower coming down and her shifty shift. But, like, prior to the shifty shift, like, I loved that. But post-shifty shift, I love when she threw up on Lorcan, obviously.
Oh, that was amazing. That was so funny.
Not once, but twice.
Twice. And the fact that he just, like, takes it, too. Like, he's so appalled, like, that he just, like, he, like, looks at her, like, I cannot believe that you just did that. Like, forget being angry. I literally cannot comprehend that that just happened to me. And Rowan's just standing there, like, you deserved it. Yeah.
I know. But what about you? What's your favorite?
I think, like, in parallel with what you were saying about, you know, Lysandra kind of taking responsibility for Evangeline, one of my favorite scenes is where Aelin and Lysandra kind of chat, and, you know, Aelin's not sure if she should trust Lysandra immediately. And then we have that sort of, you know, chat where they realize that they've both grown up in a lot of ways, and they're no longer the same women that they were, girls, really, when they were, you know, stuck in their little petty rivalry. And I love that scene so much, because if I were constantly judged by the person that I was at 16, 17, I would literally perish. Like, I don't even know what I, like, there are so many people that I kind of want to meet and, like, go back and, you know, see again from that era in my life and just be like, I want you to know I didn't stay that way. Like, I don't know. I couldn't tell you why I was that way, but I am no longer like that. Like, our teenage selves are just, like, such a, you know, of course we have fondness for whoever we were as teenagers, but, like, thank God for becoming an adult and growing up and gaining some maturity.
God, I'm such an asshole, because I'm just like, I kind of feel like I haven't changed. Like, I feel like I haven't changed. And here's the thing, like, completely, like, unrelated, which is, like, I feel like maybe this is why I go to therapy. Because I'm like, I am the same me that I was when I was 16. But I understand what you mean, though. I do understand what you mean. Because I feel like there are, like, people that, even, like, that I was friends with in my early 20s, that have changed even in their, like, late 20s, early 30s, right, even. So I feel like we get that whole shift.
Maybe you were just that mature and I was just that immature.
Well, I will say though, I kind of feel like, again, not comparing myself to Aelin, because I am not like some tragic, like, heir to a kingdom. But I had a lot of older friends growing up. Mm, and I think that they just, like, broke me out of being like immature. Like, I don't know. Like, I grew up really fast in the sense of, like, and it wasn't, like, a whole thing of acceptance either. I had mainly guy friends, and they were all older than me. Like, to the point where when I was in high school, like, I barely had any friends, like, junior, senior year, because all my friends had, like, graduated. So, but anyways, enough about me. Let's talk about Lysandra. but yes.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, yeah, that was kind of, like, my end point, period.
Oh, okay.
Of, you know, I just think, I love that that's sort of acknowledged, that growth was, like, verbally communicated. And the fact that Sarah didn't feel the need to have, you know, Lysandra and Aelin go through something together to, like, put them on the path towards friendship. She was like, no, actually, these girls have just grown up and recognize they have more in common with each other than they have differences, and so therefore it makes sense that they should be friends, and fuck anyone who wants, like, development. Like, I'm just gonna make them have a couple of conversations and we're gonna wipe our hands clean of girl hate.
Well, speaking of, I will say one thing that was pretty entertaining though was, like, their first meeting when Lysandra shows up with Evangeline like Aelin's, like, warehouse apartment, and is like with the carriage or taxi driver or whatever, and she's like, wow, like, you brought a kid with you because you think I won't, like, kill you in front of the kid or something. and then like the taxi driver, the carriage driver's there, and she's like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to kill him. And he's like, no, actually, you do not need to kill me. I won't say anything. Like, oh my god, like, that whole scene though, like, I don't think that I've ever found it to be comical until this time around, like, reading it.
No, it was pretty
I was
funny.
Like, that poor guy, like, he's just clearly at the wrong place.
When she, like, reads off of his permit, she's like, okay, John Smith of number 16, whatever the fuck lane, and he's like, oh my god.
He's like, I guess you won't say anything.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Evangeline, and she was like, I would just like a tart, please. Like, she's completely unbothered by Aelin. She's like, I don't really care about,
she's like, ooh, rhubarb, okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, no fucks about Lysandra being in danger. Yeah, like,
nope.
I mean, though, same, because if there's food involved,
if there's food, yeah,
good food,
that's that
correction.
Yep.
Anyways, but yes. I mean, Lysandra's supremacy.
No, she's amazing. I think that, like, another, like, you know, one of the more, the smaller scene, kind of underrated, but, like, still iconic, is when they're in the bakery and Lysandra's like, as soon as I'm able to shift, I'm giving myself smaller boobs. And I was just like, girl, Yes.
Yeah.
Like the back pain, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'm just going to say it. It's not.
But then again, the first thing she does is shift into shift into a kitty cat.
It's true.
Another kitty cat.
Auntie kitty cat.
Yeah. Auntie kitty cat. Exactly. Aww. Oh, snow leopard. Anyways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Such a great scene.
I know. It really was.
Okay, so I guess we're going to have to talk about the Roaelin that emerges from this book. But before I get to that, I'm going to ask a, kind of like a buffer question. And that is, which of the scenes in Queen of Shadows did we feel was the most emotional? Because I know that a lot of the fandom argues that the Roaelin scene, like their, oh God, the meeting again scene, reuniting. There we go. That's the word. The Roaelin reuniting scene is like one of the most emotional in the entire series. And so.
Okay. Well, I will say, with exception of that, like I will also put this out there, like again, flashing back to 2016 or whenever the fuck it was when this came out.
2015.
I think it was 2016 because
that was Akamath year, because Queen of Shadows parallels Alkatar.
Are you sure? Because
I'm 100% sure. Like I would stake my life on it. I'm gonna Google it right now.
Here's the thing, the reason that I'm saying that is because it might have been 2015, never mind, because I read it, I have it still on my Instagram if anybody wants to scroll back a few years.
September 1st, 2015.
Okay, was it 2015?
Yeah,
and I said 2015 or no, that's 2016. Yeah, okay, no,
but it's when okay.
But the only reason that I said that is because when I got it, I had just started working my new nanny job with Brant, and I could have sworn that it was 2016. Whatever, it's fine. But no, I remember when I was reading it, like I was making jokes. Like, I had taken pictures and I posted it, of course, afterwards. But I was like, which one's heavier, the book or the baby? Because Ernie, oh my God. Brant was a newborn at the time. So anyway, I digress. But I remember when I read that scene, I squealed.
Yeah,
like, I had to put the book down. And I was like, I mean, this is like borderline the same feels as Helion showing up on a Pegasus. Like, I was obsessed. I was so excited because, like, the whole time I'm just like, okay, enough about Kale. Where the fuck is Rowan? Because clearly Rowan is going to show up. Where the fuck is Rowan? Like, this is the longest Rowanless part of my life.
Yeah.
Like, because at that point we had waited how long until the next book, and then I still was missing Rowan. Like, the fuck. Anyways, I would say that one of the most emotional-ish scenes was when Rowan clearly was like having feels for Aelin, and she went to like lean in, and he's like, "Don't touch me like that." I was like, "Rowan, that's not nice." And like, she's super vulnerable right now. Yeah. And it's like very clear that you,
and
like,
also you clearly, yeah, exactly.
Like,
clearly
it's not like it was like she wasn't reading the signs here. Like,
right.
She's just like taking a leap of faith on this. So I want to say like that was, because at that point, like, she had already been apart. She had missed him. There was like this whole moment with them. And, you know, they had been doing a bunch of other little tasks here and there. But clearly, like, this was, I mean, long time coming. And then, but then it's clearly like you also understand where he was coming from too. Like, he still, had he really gotten over his mate's death, pregnant mate's death? Like, I mean, I get it.
We've seen them as friends, but we don't necessarily know for sure. Like, obviously they're attracted to each other, but we can't say for sure if it's like love.
Right. So,
and, you know,
I mean,
it's not on the page. Yeah.
Yeah. That is so emotional. I'm just kind of like, you already hurt her feelings once, and now we're hurting her again. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, and Aiden, like, of course, being mean to her. So.
Oh my God. I don't even want to hear his name until I bring it up in the specific question. Before that.
Do not come until I call for you.
Yeah, literally. Like, oh my God. He makes me so angry. This is an Aiden hate account, let me be clear. Anti-Aiden. Okay, but enough about him. Piece of shit that he is. the scenes in oh my goodness. Cune I tried of- to say Q of S, and then I was like, Queen, Cune of Shadows, that I felt was the most emotional, so it's actually a toss-up. the first is when Aelin and Rowan visit Sam's grave. That fucked me up a little bit. I was like, okay, well, this is traumatic. It's fine.
And didn't Rowan bring rocks? He brought stones for...
he brought stones for Sam. I was like, okay. But I feel like that, you know, Aelin, like, finally lets him go. And, like, lets that death rest and comes to terms with the fact that it wasn't her fault. Which is so great. And then you also have Rowan who, you know, as of the end of Queen of Shadows, we know is her lover now. But it's kind of like... the fact that he has the maturity to say, you know, like, thank you for taking care of her before I met her, and thank you for being a good man. Like, just that gesture, Kale and even Dorian could have never, like, they were still squabbling over her and let her come between their friendship circa Crown of Midnight. So Rowan displaying that maturity was just like, oh my God. And knowing what Sam means to Aelin, of course, it's just so good. And then the second scene that I find to be really emotional is a Kale scene. So I'm cue the scoff. Yep, there it is. but it's the scene where Kale asks
if they will go. I'm gonna edit all of this out.
Okay.
Just kidding.
I'm like, what am I gonna do? You have the editing powers here.
You're gonna like go back and make sure that the time count is correct.
I'll listen to it. No, but it's the scene where Kale asks if they go on, what if they reach only like darkness and despair in the end? And Aelin looks at him and says, well, then it's not the end. I like will never not get weepy over that scene because first of all, that's like the first scene where Kale admits that he's kind of been an asshole this entire time, which I appreciate. Kind of, thank God finally got there. But then it also, you know, kind of represents, again, the perfect ending for, like, her most important romantic relationships. Like, all of Aelin's ends thus far have actually begun or signaled sort of, like, the true beginnings mm-hmm. of better things. Which I love. I love that quote so much. I think it's a quote that, like, it rivals Don't Let the Hard Days Win, at least for me. But to... you know, sort of have this like line drawn in the sand, like actually no, fuck it, there's no such thing as no happy ending, like we are getting a happy ending if I have to fight tooth and nail for it. So her just drawing that line in the sand was very, very it made me very emo. I'm like perpetually soft over that scene, but it's fine. Okay, so going back to our favorite subject, let's talk about Rowaelyn. How did we appreciate the development of their relationship from friendship into romance? And then which was our favorite Rowaelyn scene?
Okay, so my favorite Rowaelyn scene, ironically, does not involve a bedroom. For once, it was actually when they show up to Arabin's house, and Arabin clearly is like being a total ass about like because he had sent this oil for Aelin to use or whatever, and then all of a sudden Rowan's just like, "Oh, thank you! Like my skin was a little dry." Like he's just like, "No, no, thank you so much, sir." Now we all smell just, the same.
See Arabin's face falling.
Yeah,
like, what the fuck.
Like I really loved that scene just because again it's like so cheeky and I love that and then also like any of the moments where like Rowan was like where's the rest of your nightgown, like she's clearly like teasing him and he's like wait a minute those shorts like where are the rest of your pants,
he's like this is not fair. All is not fair in love and war.
Yes. But I also really loved that we had more, like, third-person POV Rowan time.
Yes.
In Queen of Shadows. I mean, of course, we get that a little bit in Air Fire, but, like, I like that it's not so, like, dangerous. It's not always danger. Like, it was part of, like, emotion, like, how he was feeling right. romantically about her. So, so yeah, those were, like, my favorite. Of course, when they reunite is the best, of when mm-hmm. she's, like, washing his hair and
Aww, all and that. And she uses the soap that she didn't let Sam use.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
And again, that should have been the moment that everybody knew, but, you know, it's fine.
Right.
it's fine, but people still are, people to this day are still, like, Team Kale. So, Team Kale, even post Tower of Dawn, Team Kale. Like, okay, cool. But yeah, no. Wow. Exactly, Ava, exactly. that's an off-air conversation. But anywho, but yeah, I mean, so what about you?
Listen, you do you, but whoa.
Exactly.
I felt that I know that a lot of people felt that it was unexpected, but I think that the relationship development from friendship into romance was actually very organic and, like, on track. It was something that I predicted happening in Air of Fire. I was like, there's no way this will just stay as a friendship. And so I appreciated, you know, just how much more flirtatious their relationship got. And also, especially the fact that, like, Aelin is flirting and Rowan is, like, also flirting, but he also feels like panic. Like, as you were saying, we get sort of third person POV. So we sort of see in his brain, and it just seems to be, like, on fire the entire time. Like, you can practically see the like nervous, almost like anxiety fueled, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Moments in Rowan's brain, which I just really enjoyed. I thought those were a lot of fun. but my favorite way, it's like, it's not even 100% like a Rowaylin like ship scene, but one of my favorite moments of their dynamic is where they encounter Lorkin for the first time, who we'll talk about in a moment here because we can't not talk about Lorkin.
Of course not.
But they encounter Lorkin for the first time, and Aelin puts her knife against his dick and is like, this is a really easy way for you to lose, like, or this is like a big risk for you to take or something like that. And Lorkin, not wanting to be castrated, backs off, very wise of him. And then after Lorkin leaves, Rowan is like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Don't you understand that Lorkin is such a threat? Like, he could have killed you so easily. This is so bad. And, you know, he's like, don't piss him off. And Aelin looks at him and she's like, at least I didn't say that it was a little risk or something like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah, totally. That's true.
Because she was like, Rowan's literally explaining all of the ways in which Lorkin could murder her. And Aelin's like, the next time I see him, I'm going to straight up say he has small dick energy. Like, try me. I don't even care. I love that. I love that dynamic for them because it is still, you do still have Rowan kind of being like mother hen. Like, okay, let's use our brains here. Let's not take stupid risks. And Aelin's like, I am literally going to piss him off in the easiest, most simplest way possible. I love that scene so much. I thought it was so funny. And Lorkin deserved it because he was being a dick in this book. So speaking of Lorkin and also Elide, these are two new characters that we meet. I know that Lorkin doesn't have a POV role in this book, but he is definitely an important character. So how did we feel about the introduction of these two? Because it really, like, for all intents and purposes, this is kind of the first time that we're, like, really meeting Lorkin, even though he shows up in Air of Fire.
Well, he's definitely in Air of Fire, though, because he's the one that made the shield that wouldn't let Rowan get to Aelin.
No, right, but this is, like, I mean, he has more of a speaking role.
Oh, okay.
And he's, more influencing things.
Look, let's be real here. I obviously was 100% Team Lorkin, even when he was being manipulative, and even when he totally set a trap with the Hellhounds, or the what, they weren't called Hellhounds, what were they called?
Wordhounds,
yeah. Like, I mean...
I know.
Look, you give me a morally gray, like, grumpy man, or woman, really, because really Manon is like, the same way. Like, I love those characters. I will never not love those characters. Anyways, Lorkin is he has a piece of my heart forever. Okay. So I enjoyed getting a lot more. And I mean, I loved that, of course, like they were like being conniving. and also to some extent, Lorcan was also a tool to like bring Ro-Aelin together because.
Oh, absolutely.
Like that whole scene where he like had the knife to Aelin's throat. And like that was clearly like the turning point for Rowan where he was just like, all right, I need to like shit or get off the pot here. And like clearly there are feelings. So yeah. I love Lorcan, especially absolutely. Towards the end, like where he clearly had like, you know, a conscience and went back to save Rowan right. and Adian, which and technically he could have just gone back to save just Adian, considering, mm-hmm. you know, Adian is Gavriel's son. So, but clearly he had a conscience because he saved both Rowan and Adian. So,
right.
Just putting that out there for anybody who doesn't like Lorcan, because why?
I love Lorcan because especially in Queen of Shadows, and I will elaborate more on this because I think we see a bit of a shift in Empire of Storms. But my favorite thing about like Queen of Shadows era Lorcan is how unapologetic he is. Like I think even in Heir of Fire, even when Rowan was at like his most like asshole behavior, you can kind of feel that he's like so like damaged and hurt and heartbroken. That he doesn't like truly to the core of his being enjoy being a dick. Mm-hmm. He's just manifesting in that way. Whereas Lorcan is like, I was born an asshole. I am living as an asshole and I will fucking die an asshole. And I really do not care. Like I don't care. And you know, so unlike Kale, who's an asshole but thinks that he's not an asshole, Lorcan is an asshole who, like, cherishes being an asshole. Like, he wears that title like it's a badge of honor. And I love the fact that, like, you were saying that he, like, you know, he tricks them into thinking that he's killed all the Wordhounds, but then does go back for them. I love all the times that he... I know I probably shouldn't say this, but I do genuinely love all of the times that he, like, threatens Aelin, like, because he seems to be like, it's just funnier to me when he does it. Like, obviously Aelin gets threatened quite a bit, but whenever Lorcan threatens her, it always feels like she gains like the upper hand, and it seems like he walks away with like an oh, like I lost again to this like stupid girl. Like it just strikes me as almost that dynamic that you see in like movies or books sometimes where it's like a really tough guy is suddenly shoved into a parental role and he has to take care of like a young child, like a girl who's super sassy and he doesn't know what to do with himself. Like I feel like Dwayne Johnson plays that role quite a bit. And he just like constantly getting roasted by this girl who like should have, you know, logically no upper hand over him. But that's like one of my favorite tropes is like small girl bosses around gruff, tough guy. Mm-hmm. Which again is something that we'll see a little bit more in Empire of Storms. But yeah, no, I love Lorcan. Like he makes me chuckle. I don't think Sarah like wrote him intending for that to be the reaction of the reader, but like,
well, he just, too like, late. Makes me
laugh. Yeah, it is too late. It's how I'm reading him. And then regarding Aelid, I love her and my opinion has stayed the same in that I ship her and Manon. And that's kind of all I have to say.
I know. I just, it's so hard.
Yeah,
it's, it really like, is. Even now, like, just reading it, yeah. it's like, I refuse. Another thing is, I guess, if you think about it, though, Manon kind of has this same blurred lines relationship with a lot of the 13, with the exception, right. of course, of Astrid, who is her actual cousin. But, like, there's just like a fluidity to their relationship, and it's not totally. Necessarily like that you even assume that they haven't been they've ever fooled around or experimented or whatever, like no, but like at least with Manon and Aelid, I'm just like but maybe
no totally
like I'm still open to this.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't matter how many times I've read this series, like I will forever ship that hardcore.
Same.
I mean, absolutely. Except for that, and of course other things with Manon, but like TBD.
No. With Manon, we could have had it all. Like, we literally cue Adele. I would have loved that relationship so much.
I know.
It's fine. Speaking of Manon, what was our favorite Manon scene? She had quite a few iconic moments.
Oh, man. I just, I love Manon so much that, like, literally, like, I mean, I can't even say it without, like, can't even say it without, like, a smile on my face, just because I really, really, I mean, hashtag witch shit. I will say that, like, that whole scene where they went to go save Lysandra and mm-hmm. Astrid and Manon were, like, going after them because clearly they had figured out that she was a witch killer, Aelin was, and like that whole moment where, like, they both recognized that they were both badass bitches and, like, wouldn't kill each other. So I loved that moment, because she was just like, well, I guess I have met my match. It's fine. But also I really loved that, like, even when she was super conflicted being, like, the wing leader and dealing with all the stuff, like, that she still, like, you could tell that she wasn't willing to blindly follow.
Right.
So I really love that about her character too. Because she could have been so by the book and stuff, and, like, again, super ruthless and not give a fuck about anything. But even how she treated a lead, like,
totally.
Yeah. I love Manon's character. Hashtag witch shit.
No, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
She truly is an icon.
Yeah. I'm basically gonna make a shirt in the shop that's like hashtag witch shit. Perfect.
Amazing. Yeah. Honestly, it should be, like, the tagline for the whole podcast.
I know.
Yeah, she's incredible. I mean, like, I know that it's basic, but I love the scene where Astarin kind of explains why Manon's grandma is such a fucked up figure. And an awful human, well, I guess not human, an awful witch. Because I think that's, like, again, one of the moments where Manon kind of draws that line in the sand, where she's like, no, I have agency in my life and I am going to, like, do something about all of these fucked up things that I'm seeing. And part of what I love about it, again, this is, like, that character complexity, is not necessarily like, oh my God, Arwen is gonna, like, launch a war and it's gonna be so bad and a bunch of humans are gonna die. No. She's like, I care about exactly 14 people, the 13 plus Abraxos, and this is inconvenient to us. And they, like, my 13 were hurt and I don't like it. And so that's why I'm going to fuck shit up. Like, it's not necessarily this, like, morally good, selfless care about the fate of the world in the way that, you know, kind of other characters demonstrate. It's, no, this is inconvenient for me and mine, and so I'm going to stop it now. And I just, yeah, I loved that scene. I thought it was very much a turning point and very much, you know, shows just how loyal Manon has always been, even though she wouldn't necessarily recognize it in herself initially, because that sort of thing doesn't, that sort of loyalty shift doesn't happen overnight unless things have been brewing for quite a while. That was a pun. It was a very bad pun, but it was a pun.
Hashtag witch shit.
Hashtag witch shit. So, yeah, I love that that was kind of, you know, Manon recognizes the relationship that she has with her cousin, and also, like, her boundary, because her boundaries have been tested since she stepped onto the page, and now we kind of see where she draws that line. And it ends at the 13. So I love, yeah, she's just amazing. I think she's wonderful. Just such a baddie.
I know.
So speaking of baddies, but shifting gears to people who are just bad and, like, baddies in the sense,
like, that we legit want to, like, punt villains them
across a football field. No. Let's talk about Adian, and how much of a dipshit he is in this book. Mm-hmm. So as I was reading, I pulled out so many instances where he is a dick to Lysandra, and for what? And one of the chief, like, things that I see is when Lysandra has been taken by the people to like go to Morath, and that's like a whole plot point. He's like, well, we have to kill her. If she comes back with like a ring on her hand, then she just has to die, period. Like, not even an ounce of like remorse, not even like, oh, Aelin, oh no, are you okay? Like, this is your dear friend. Not like, oh, we should try to save her. He's like, no, that bitch has to die. Like, who gave you the right? You are king of nobody here, sir. Like, oh my God.
Heir to nothing.
Literally. No, you're right though. Like, he talks about himself whenever he mopes. He's like, I'm the prince of nothing. And I'm like, you're right, sir. Are you looking for someone once, to you like, are corrupt. Coddle you? Exactly. I just like, I didn't get it. Like, he is a dick to Aelin about the blood oath. And I'm like, dude, you're literally called Adderland's whore. Why would she immediately go, I'm going to give away the blood oath to my dear cousin, Adderland's whore. It's fine. I hate him so much. I'm curious to see people in the comments, whoever's listening to this, how do you feel about Adian? Because like, I don't see a whole lot of people talk about him that much, and I don't know if there's just a general consensus that he's not worth talking about, or if people are like genuinely conflicted and just don't say anything. So let us know, because I want to know.
I know. The thing is it's so, I genuinely wonder, with exception of later books, I genuinely wonder if the reason that I never picked up on my aggravation, my grievances with Adian was probably because these books were coming out, you know, a year, year and a half apart.
Right.
And then, of course, after, you know, what, Air of Fire, that's when ACOTAR came out.
Yes.
So at that point, like, our attention is divided a little bit. So, like, you're not as focused on just Throne of Glass. So, like, I wonder if genuinely if that, like, contributed to me not feeling as passionately, like, angry about Adian's behavior and his character's actions in Queen of Shadows. So I think, like, of course, like, as we talked about in the last episode, like, I feel like with each reread, it just, like, hits home even more.
It exacerbates
because, like, we're reading it back to back, and you're just like, holy fucking shit, sir.
Yep.
Like, Kale, at least I understand. I get where he's come from. Like, we kind of had, like, this whole, like, mini conversation about Kale's privilege and him just not understanding. Right. And, like, that Adian is a completely different thing here.
Absolutely.
Like, you were also, air quotes, royalty, and you also had a downfall. You also had to, like, scrape to get by for however many years until now. So, like, you know better, sir, than to come out your mouth and say some shit. Like, I don't understand. Like, at least Kale. Who would have thought that I would be defending Kale for 5 fucking minutes? Like, at least Kale I can understand, but Adian I can't. And that's what makes it so difficult to, like, overlook some of this behavior from him, because he really has no business whatsoever.
Totally.
Regardless of his birthright, regardless of being king of nothing. Exactly. Being king of nothing, being like Adderland's whore, being whatever, and like fill in the blank. He has no fucking business. His mouth. Like, the audacity, sir.
Like, Kale really tried it in a couple of moments, but at least I understand in all of the moments where he's like, Aelin, you could become a monster. Like, who's going to put a check on your power? Like, I mean, we live in a democracy, so I appreciate checks and balances. Like, in that regard, like, I get it. I also understand that Kale is only receiving news that he hears from across the sea. So all he knows about Aelin's magic is that she used it to encircle an entire city of Fae and fuck up an entire legion of the king's men, because he doesn't know at this point that they're not men. So, like, in a very small regard, I understand why he's so reticent to her entire existence. Mm-hmm. But Adian has nothing, like, no room for anything except for gratitude. Honestly, this bitch, like, risked everything. She teamed up with Arabin to get him free. And the first thing that he does is start whining about how he can't go gallivanting around the streets. Like, sir, you were just put, like, executed or attempted to be executed, like, 10 minutes ago. And you already want to start going outside, walking around the capital city.
Dude, it's like, literally like, how the tables have turned.
Yeah, exactly.
And so fucking, like, you can barely lift your fucking head. So not only, not only fill in the blank to get to this point, you're freeloading off of Ayla and living in her fucking apartment.
Right.
Then you come out your mouth to say some shit. You're judging the decisions that she's making.
Yep.
When clearly it's like, the cycle of Aelin and everybody who underestimates her is like, seriously, everybody talks mad shit. And then when it gets revealed that, like, she's so brilliant, they're like, oh, wow, I guess she was really smart. She really knew what she was doing. But then it cycles through again. Like, you're still going to fucking, we're still going to get to this point again in the next book. Like, ciao. If you don't fucking shut the fuck up, idiot.
Ian is also represented by the Kale was too stunned to do anything. Like, I feel like that's also Adian. Like, anytime she's
not even too
amazing,
stunned.
He's like, how'd you do that? Like, he tries
to,
like,
stupid to live.
Some Adian discourse. But, like, come on. Also, the fact that when I first read the book, I was like, oh my god, that's so cute that Adian is, like, a fangirl of Rowan. But then as soon as Rowan actually shows up on the page, Adian tries to start shit and be like, let's go. He literally is like, let's fight. Let's, like, right now. Tries to straight up fight Rowan. And I'm like,
ciao.
Did you?
We're going to go from demi-fae to fae. You really want to? Okay. He can turn into a fucking falcon. Yeah. The fuck, what are you going to do, sir? Turn into a blubbering imbecile. Like, that's what he shifts into.
It's like the stakes get higher and Adian gets dumber. Like,
I know.
He just...
so fucking stupid.
Oh my god. Okay.
Why is he so dumb?
Why is he so dumb? Maybe he's like the mirror that needs to be held up. Sarah was like, Tower of Dawn is going to be its own book, which means that we won't have Kale to be the stupid one who goes against everyone's well wishes. So who's going to step in to fill that role?
Like, anybody who is... anybody who is an Adian lover, please come in. Yeah. Chime in and please explain to us. Because at this point, it's been how many years that we have been... that we done known this man? It's not getting any better, folks. It's not.
I first realized it in 2018 in Kingdom of Ash. That was when I started, like, paying attention to how much of an asshole he was. And now that I do these rereads, I'm like, wait a second. This was not just contained to Kingdom of Ash. This was, like, every single book that he appeared in. And again, no hate to Kale or Adian stans. Please, actually, we would love to hear your reasons for loving them. I will not scoff at you. No promises on Steph's behalf. But, okay, well, I might scoff at you if you love Adian. Because I just don't get it. Like, what's he brought to the table other than a big mouth? That he just can't back it up either. I could appreciate a big mouth if he, like, backed it up. But he does not. All right. Okay, that's enough of that. I have to, like, I'm going to rein myself in because I could probably go for another 48 minutes of explaining why I think he's the worst. I won't, but so of all of the reveals that happened in Queen of Shadows, aside from the fact that we learned that Adian truly is that bitch, like,
clearly
not in a good way, what was the most devastating / our favorite / like the most brilliant reveal from Queen of Shadows? The most jaw-dropping one. It can be a good reveal or a bad reveal, whichever.
I would say that the first time I read it was Lysandra being a shifter.
Yes.
Was a big, like, I mean, and of course that whole scene was even great when, like, Lysandra's clearly just trying to be cheeky and Rowan, true to Rowan style, like, completely, like, shuts surreal it down. Moment. Like, oh, what? You're just studying my fangs so that you can replicate them, shifter, or, like, whatever he said. And so I'm like, what, Rowan, like, hold on a second, let's back this train up, hold on. Like, what?
You can't just say that and then not explain. But he literally just like dropped that bomb and walked away. He's like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I will say that that was probably the one thing. I mean, and of course, also getting to, I think we meet Alid, right? For the first time in this book.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like being like seeing how bad Alid situation is, was also like really sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my, what about you?
So I think one of the worst things that happens in Queen of Shadows is we learn that fucking Elena and Gavin lied to everyone about defeating Arawan.
Oh, true.
Lock him up. And yeah, I just like can't even comprehend like wrapping my mind around the idea that, you know, this great evil that there are a ton of legends about has been defeated, except it's like defeated, but in air quotes, but no one tells you.
Yeah.
You just have to figure that out on your own. So that's fucked up. I honestly don't understand why they didn't announce to the world that this was a temporary solution. Like, I feel like the world would have maybe been more prepared if Gavin and Elena had taken it, not even to the world, but maybe to a select few to pass down through generations to be like, psst, he's just taking a power nap, so be on the lookout. I don't know why they didn't do that. Doesn't make sense to me, but that's fine. And then the second thing was the reveal that Caltaine has like secretly been like eating her Valk demon for a while, like consuming it, and like twisting its power against it. So she's actually been in control of her own body for quite a while and has just been playing this game. I loved that reveal. I thought it was amazing.
Where she's like, I got this. Like, leave.
Like, she never really needed a redemption, but like if she had needed a redemption, that would have been that moment. So I'm not really sure what that scene was, aside from like a giant middle finger to like everything that the aristocracy stood for, which they absolutely deserved. So yeah, I thought that was amazing.
Word.
She's great. Caltaine supremacy.
Always. I mean, like I said in the previous episode, I love Caltaine's character. I mean, despite, of course, I mean, she just had it rough.
Right.
But I love that she was able to control how she went out too.
Oh, like, totally.
Yeah. It wasn't like some tragic, like, oh, please, you know, kill me because I've been like, you know, possessed by this, like whatever. Yeah. No, she was like, I got this. Bye.
Yeah.
Here, let me cut this stone out. Let me hand this to you. Like, be on your merry way. Take your picnic basket. Get out of here. Yeah. I love that she, like, even in that last moment, she was like, I got this. Okay, bye.
Yep. And she's, like, so ready for it. So there's no, like, this is a mercy. She's like, I actually have no more mercy. I have no more remorse. I have no pity. I know exactly, like, what is going to happen to me. And I'm taking you fuckers out with me. Like, that's what this is.
Yeah.
I loved that moment. I mean, there are so many women. I think that's a recurring theme throughout the series is that there are so many women who are constantly underestimated and kind of pushed to the side. But nobody puts Caltaine in a corner.
Nope.
She fucked them all up. And it was pretty glorious, I have to say. Like, that was just, it was, yeah, so good. Makes my heart so happy. I love how I'm like, we're both like, wow, the murder of a whole bunch of people and the absolute demolition of the castle is like so peaceful. Nature is healing.
I love it.
But it's true, though. Okay, so all of that being said, what was our favorite part of Queen of Shadows? Could be a theme, a character, a scene, whatever.
Honestly, I feel like it's like that whole, it's the whole section of them going to Arabin's, getting the leg up on Arabin dying, and then Aelin and Rowan mildly hooking up. Like, not even mildly, just getting to second base. And closely in second place, because it happens a little bit later, is Aelin showing up in the gold nightgown or the gold night clothes, yes, because that's what Rowan wanted. And her being like, don't you rip this. I borrowed this from Lysandra. I have to return it in the morning.
Can we just like talk about the fact that Rowan was like, he was like, don't touch me like that. And in the same breath, he was like, I have requests for what you wear to bed. Right? Like, sir.
I mean, it wasn't the same scene, fooling? But yes, no, I know. One. I know.
He's like, I don't think of you that way. And then
he's like, but actually, you in that dress, though, thank you. Exactly.
Oh, poor man. Poor man.
I know. I love that. What about you?
One of the favorite things that I love about, I mean, Queen of Shadows, there are so many amazing things, but one of the things that I really love is that Aelin is like kind of like a woman stealer. And I mean that in a sense that she like makes friends with the most like improbable women. So like we have Lysandra, who she swore to hate, you know, 2 years ago, and now they're grown up and they're BFFs and they're making fun of the men and complaining about boobs and eating pastries and everything's amazing. She makes friends with Manon. It's not really like friendship, but you can see that there's that relationship there. They at least understand something in each other. So she's like taking Parrington/Arawan's wing leader away from him. And then just like cackle fest of all cackle fests, you have Nezrin, who is like half in love with Aelin, not like in love with, but you know what I mean.
Oh, I know. She's like, oh, I get it.
By the end of the book, she's like, yeah, I know, you're a bad bitch. And Kale's like, no, we're supposed to hate her. And Nezrin's like, fuck you. I don't do anything that you tell me to do. Aelin is amazing. Like, it's really like the only one who can't see it is Kale, which like kind of makes me feel bad for him, but not really. He did it to himself. But yeah, so the fact that she just like gathers all of these, you know, like we talk a lot about how she gathers all of these like powerful men into her court and into her favor. So we have Rowan, obviously. I guess Adian, King of Nothing, is arguably powerful, whatever. We have Dorian. But I think what's really impressive is how many incredible, influential women she also brings to her side. And it's something that we see a lot more in Queen of Shadows, and it made me really happy. So I would say that's my favorite part.
Word. I mean, yeah, I think that, I mean, again, Aelin, I mean, everybody else supremacy, but Aelin, of course, in all things.
Not Adian supremacy.
No, fuck a Adian.
All right. Well, I'm amazed that we're keeping these under an hour. I feel like,
well, it's mainly because I feel like if we elaborate too much on things that we'll accidentally spoil, or unintentionally spoil, especially considering you and I are so far ahead of our reading schedule. And to be perfectly honest, of course, like, we were anticipating this episode and future episodes to be two parts, but like, I mean, I think that we'll just be able to unload with the last episode. Oh, yeah. So we'll just save all of that.
Yes.
Just giving you guys a little taste. I mean, you all understand where our loyalties lie and like all that. Aww. So yeah. I mean, obviously, it's going to be straight Rowan, straight Ren Ava. Yes.
He comes back in future books, and I'm very excited about it.
I pay attention to him now more than, like, that you've said it, is what I'm saying. Like,
I appreciate
that. Like, so now that you said it, I'm just like, oh, wow, that's Ava's man, I guess. That's my
brand, making people look twice at random men, random characters that you would never think twice about. You'd be like, okay, moving on. But now it's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
It's that weirdo's, like, she's randomly staked a claim on this guy who has maybe 5 words of, like, speaking time. It's fine. It's whatever. It's all good. I just have a very vivid imagination. So all of the holes that Sarah has left surrounding these characters, I fill those holes. That was a pun. It was not a very good one, and I apologize. But the holes are being filled. Don't worry, everyone.
That's what she said?
I feel like that's what he said. mean,
whoever.
Yeah. We're fluid that way.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
As per usual, thanks for hanging in there with us, because holy shit. And again, next week's episode will maybe be one episode. We'll see. Talking about Empire of Storms, which Ava and I are currently reading at time of recording. And I can't wait to discuss, because Adian's back on his bullshit. And
oh my God.
Just when you thought I'd be talking shit about Kale, no. I'm going to be talking shit about
Kale's Adian. Absent for this book, so we have to have a new target.
I know. But I mean, to be perfectly fair, like, Kale wasn't in this the whole time either in Queen of Shadows, and we still had things to say. But I mean, I think that Nezrin was a good buffer for Kale for us.
Totally.
So
she's awesome.
Therefore, I left it alone. But anyways, yes. So let's go ahead and anticipate next week's episode, aka Adian bashing, for Empire of Storms. But thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Mastastic and our website, mastastic.com. Fandomtastic.com is our shop, and patreon.com/fam, like Patreon maybe? Whoever, wherever you would like to follow us, follow us. Make sure to leave us a review and a rating. Hopefully all good things. And I think I've covered it all.
Yeah, I think that's everything.
Word.
All right. Thank you all for listening. And remember, don't let the hard days win unless you're Adian.
Or Kale, but we'll just go for Adian this episode. That's fine.
This episode is sponsored by Anti-Adian Partnerships.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next week.